American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I am professor and chair of the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today it'll just be me. I'm going to be talking about DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And this sort of stems from this morning where I was on WFAE's Charlotte Talks to talk about DACA with several other people. And if you've never done this sort of thing before, it's both really interesting and it's also frustrating. The interesting part is that you get to talk about stuff you're really interested in with other highly knowledgeable people. But the problem is that, especially if there are a bunch of other guests, but oftentimes regardless, is that there's just so many things that you don't get to talk about, that there are loose threads everywhere, is that you have just an extremely short amount of time to get out what it is that you want to say. And so I thought this was one opportunity, especially with one of the people on the show was a sheriff, to sort of follow up a little bit with the discussion. I'll post a link to that as well on the blog to the radio show, so that if you're interested, you can hear it. Besides me, the other guests were Alan Gordon, who's an immigration attorney here in Charlotte, has been working on this issue for a long time. Jose Hernandez Perez, by phone, who is executive director of the Latin American Coalition, which is one of the main advocacy groups here in Charlotte for the Latino population. Marai Zamora, she is a recent Johnson C. Smith graduate, and she's a DACA recipient, so she was able to give the sort of firsthand account of what this means in practice. And then the last was Sam Page, who's a sheriff for Rockingham County. And so his viewpoint was one of complete support for ending DACA and very strong support for President Trump. Now, I think it's useful to have that viewpoint on just as a way to sort of better understand it. Unfortunately, there wasn't much time to have any sort of give and take because, you know, of the time constraints. And as Mike Collins, the host of Charlotte Talks, told us, that the radio station is in a just started a pledge process. So the show was actually a little bit shorter than normal because they had more time in between parts, in between segments where they were asking for money. I can't begrudge public radio for asking for money, but I mean, that just means that there's less time to try to grapple with this issue, which is obviously quite complex. So I think I want to start with him because it's sort of the most frustrating part, but also it's indicative of how the problematic nature of the debate, because what the sheriff said he wants is that he wants no temporary measures. He doesn't want any executive orders, so he wants Congress to take action. Now, he didn't say what would happen if Congress, or how we would respond if Congress enshrined temporary measures, which they certainly can do, and they do with temporary protected status for other groups of immigrants. But he didn't address that. One troubling part, and I mentioned this on the show, was that his attitude seemed to be that if Congress was unable to take action, then the DACA recipients should be the ones to pay, which didn't make any sense to me, you know, because if we agree, as he seemed to, as he sort of prefaces, Donald Trump always prefaces that, well, okay, at least this particular group of immigrants didn't come here on their own. They were very young. Marai was this very young. She was like three or something when her mother brought her from Mexico. If they're, you know, if they generate quite a bit of sympathy, well, then why in the world would you punish them just because Congress can't get its act together? The bigger problematic part, though, and he said this, I think, a couple of times, was that he sees the issue in terms of public safety. And this is just a really critical misconception, because the empirical evidence is overwhelming that immigrants, undocumented immigrants, commit crimes at lower rates than other people, than citizens. So the growth of undocumented population does not mean that crime goes up, and deporting everybody will not mean that suddenly somehow crime will go down. Yes, are there people who commit crimes? Yes, and actually there's unanimity that if you commit a crime, if you rob somebody, if you kill somebody, that you should be punished. If you are an immigrant, then you should be deported. That is, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But it's a much bigger leap to say that everybody is somehow equally implicated. But of course, that is what then candidate Trump was basically saying about Mexican immigrants. They don't send their best, which is also the exact opposite of the truth, given how difficult it is to migrate. So that's just this misconception that's so persistent. And it shows the severe problem with the debate itself, because if you have falsehoods that are believed, then there's almost no way to get around it. If you look at Breitbart, you will see daily an emphasis on things, bad things that immigrants have done. And the idea is that immigrants are bad. And so if a lot of people are being pounded with that kind of anecdotal information, well, you know, it's going to be very hard to get any kind of real debate going, because you're disagreeing on fundamental facts. And immigration is littered with these misperceptions. People still believe that immigrants don't pay taxes. People don't know that that many people are paying into a Social Security system that they will and they'll never see this money again. There's just the number of misperceptions is large, and I've been now at this for quite a long time. I've been on Charlotte Talks. It's been over the first time I discussed immigration on that was probably over 10 years ago, and it's almost like all we can do is keep repeating things over and over and over. You know, I've given talks. I've written op-eds, I've written blog posts, I've done tons of things in the public, and you just hope that bit by bit you're convincing people of things that are accurate. But it's very hard when there's, especially through social media now, just really an avalanche of false information. And if you have sheriffs and presidents, for that matter, repeating it, well, it's a real uphill battle. Switching gears a little bit. Alan Gordon brought up the important point about unemployment, because once March 5th hits, even the Cato Institute had done some numbers, it's something like 30,000 people a month will suddenly become undocumented. And for DACA recipients, often they're employed, and so they'll either suddenly be working illegally, which is problematic, of course, both for themselves and their employer, or they will have to leave their job. And leaving the job means a drop in productivity for the places that they're working, with no necessarily guarantee that there's somebody qualified or wants that particular job. We don't know. The other misperception is that immigrants are taking jobs Americans want. We don't know that. By and large, immigrants are a boost to the economy, but you know, you're going to have 30,000 people suddenly leaving the workforce every month, and that's a lot of people. So you're losing productivity, you're losing taxes, you know, you're creating then this other ripple effects. And if they continue working, they're doing so illegally, which then increases the chances that they're going to find ICE agents at their door. President Trump has said people shouldn't worry about getting deported, which doesn't make any sense, because, you know, if you're undocumented, then you can be picked up for any reason. You know, you cannot be confident that the government also isn't going to use the information that you provided when you applied for DACA against you and find you. There's no reason to believe that. So, you know, it's going to have an economic ripple effect. It's going to have a social ripple effect. As we know, it'll poison relationships between more people and the police. You know, and we heard in Houston about how people had to be reassured that they could go to shelters and not be arrested. I mean, that's just crazy. But there is absolutely no trust that ICE won't be coming after people. In North Carolina, more locally, we've got about 27,000 DACA recipients. And again, those people are going to suddenly be unemployed, and that's just a net drain on the economy. And certainly, we're going to see more protests, and in general, you know, more polarization. So there's really not much to be gained here. In terms of what Congress might do, one problem that I believe it was Marco Rubio pointed out was that Trump gave no guidelines for what he would sign. So he tells Congress, well, go do something. Sarah Huckabee Sanders also said that it would be preferable if there was some kind of comprehensive reform. But we don't know what Trump wants. Congress doesn't know what Trump wants. Some people like Senator Tillis here in North Carolina are talking about, you know, being part of this movement to create some kind of new Dream Act that would be narrowly focused just on that group of people. Senator Burr, meanwhile, talked about comprehensive reform. Comprehensive reform means different things to different people, but in general, what it entails is some kind of amnesty for people who are undocumented. It involves some sort of security, border, interior, both. It entails setting up some kind of guest worker program so that all of the push and pull factors are taken into account, because you can't then pretend that people aren't going to continue coming, and you can never pretend that somehow the border is going to be impermeable. So you have to start putting all of these things together. And it's difficult, and it's extremely expensive, and it's polarizing. And I don't see how that could be done in 6 months. The last major legislation, immigration reform, back in 1986, Immigration Reform and Control Act, that was bipartisan. You had President Reagan in the White House. You had a Democratic Congress. That took a year and a half. So it was introduced in spring of 85. There was a lot of debate about it. You will get businesses coming in with their concerns about red tape and how much work they have to do with regard to verifying employees, all that sort of thing, keeping track of them, whatever. You have all these different interest groups. That took a year and a half. It was signed in November of 1986. That's a very long time ago. And that, under the best of circumstances, it was a year and a half. And that was back when you had the president who was actually saying positive things about immigrants. So times have changed, and you know, a piece of legislation that large is, if it's done in 6 months, I just don't see how that could happen. But added to that is that Congress is already dealing with debt ceiling, where Trump actually has already sided with Democrats. They have to deal with passing a budget. Both these things are then going to pop up again in December. There's the issue of wall building, which Trump wants and Congress is generally lukewarm on, but it's a campaign promise. We have the Affordable Care Act, which is still sort of hanging around. And the members of Congress, and you know, every so often trying to come up with some sort of solution instead of, we have this government program that the government's opposed to. And tax reform, which was supposed to be the next big thing. You can't do all of these things at one time. It's not possible. And they're going to start then getting attached to each other. And that makes it even harder to get anything passed. And 6 months is just not a very long time to do all of that. So something is going to have to give. And you know, something that has already been, I mean, the first Dream Act was introduced, I believe it was in 2001. We already know that Congress is dysfunctional after we see the aftermath of the debate over the Affordable Care Act. You know, that there's just a lot going on at one time. And there's still a lot of people for whom amnesty, meaning getting any legal status to anybody who is in the country illegally right now, is something that they strongly oppose. You know, I'm not really sure how you're going to get all of that done. Added to that, Trump also said cryptically that if Congress didn't do something by May, by March 5th, that he would revisit the issue. Nobody, I think, including him, has any idea what that means. So it can be viewed, though, by Congress is that if we don't do anything, or if we're unable to do anything, then we kick the can back to Trump, and then he can deal with it. Revisiting the issue, it's just so hard to imagine Trump trying to rekindle what Obama did, you know, just with just by the executive branch. Because he's already said that it's a bad idea, it's unconstitutional, it's illegal, and whatever else. So he can't pass a law on his own. So what would revisit the issue even mean? What happens if Congress actually has some sort of bill being put together and then run out of time? I mean, I guess then we'll just have people going out of status, even as there's a bill intended to give them status. I mean, you know, nobody knows, but there's going to be a strong incentive for a number of members of Congress to say, look, we're going to deal with other issues, and you know, and we'll find out then what revisit the issue means. You know, because they're going to take a lot of political heat for whatever decisions that they're going to make. This is going to be getting into primary season, so you're going to see increased polarization. And it might be nicer to not have to stick their necks out and do anything. The last time there was any push for real legislation was back in 2013. The Senate passed something. The House refused to take it up. I think I mentioned this on the show. That's an entirely possible kind of outcome again. You have a number of senators, including Tillis, who are at least talking about some sort of Dream Act. More Republicans, anecdotally, it seems, are talking like that in the Senate, not so much in the House. And I think the House is going to be a lot tougher. So to conclude, right now, I think there's no chance of comprehensive reform. I just don't see time-wise and political risk-wise and political capital-wise that can happen. You know, the assumption that Republicans were going to get punished by, you know, especially Latino voters, has not come true. It might come true at some point as more Latino voters become registered, or as more there are more voters. But right now, there's a lot of Republicans who are in districts with very small, negligible Latino populations, and so for them, doing nothing is preferable. Blocking reform is actually preferable. And they've saw President Trump come to office on an explicitly anti-immigration and anti-immigrant platform and winning. So the lesson there is that they don't have any incentive, really, to stick their necks out. I'd say there's a tiny chance of just more narrow DACA legislation. Still not a great chance, but there is at least a chance. It's a little bit, but there's more sympathy for this very particular group of people. And there's more, seems, conservative support for that than for a comprehensive reform. But it involves amnesty. It involves giving people status who are undocumented. And you know, that's a very big obstacle to overcome. So I'd say small. I won't bother trying to put a number on it, but it's small. The most likely outcome is that we get to March 5th without any immigration legislation. And then we find out what revisit means. You know, and we, Trump probably doesn't know what it means, but then, you know, is that he, same with the Affordable Care Act. He said, okay, we got to act, we got to do something. Congress really couldn't do anything, and everything just keeps limping along. I'd say that's the most likely outcome. But at a certain, in a certain way, you know, for so many years, we've seen immigration reform fail. So that's kind of sort of the default. That doesn't mean it's going to have to be like that forever, but it is kind of the default. And I hope I'm wrong, but at least at this point, it doesn't seem that way. We can only hope that with the spotlight on the issue, that there is there's a little bit more action. But when, again, when we see the Affordable Care Act outcome, that doesn't matter at all, because there couldn't have been more of a spotlight on it, and still nothing happened. So with that, I am out of time. And again, if you're interested in this, interested in the conversation, then go to my blog, and I'll have a link to the WFAE site. And at some point, I don't remember how quickly, but at some point they'll have a digital file there that you can listen to the show.